Blog Talk Radio. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm so excited. I'm so excited, but that's not my name. My name is Marcia Witeka, and I'm so delighted to have you join me today. When people say, well, what is this all about? This is when I want everybody to know how important I think the three C's are. And what those are for me is conversations plus connections equals community. And I've always been interested in people, and my common question is usually followed by, what's your story? And my guest today is Lisa Cook. She is the founder of KidSwim, a developmental swim school. And I want to welcome you to the show today, Lisa. I'm glad you're joining me.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
My pleasure. What I want people to know is that swimming is one of your greatest joys. And after more than 30 years of teaching swimming, you've taken your passion for swimming education and founded KidSwim, which is a developmental swim school. What exactly does that mean, and why is it such a passion for Lisa? We're going to find out today, because teaching children to swim in the KidSwim method and to be water safe is the focus of this show. And we can't get this show started, Lisa, without talking about that connection I mentioned at the top of the show, because both you and I know Catherine Iannucci, don't we?
Yes, we do.
I met Catherine in the late 1990s when I got a job at the Westchester YMCA. I think I started in 1995, and I think Catherine came in around 96 or 7, and she was my supervisor at the Westchester Y. I was ultimately the membership director. But how do you know Catherine?
So I know Catherine through the Westside Y, and we met in, I'm going to say it was maybe 89 or 90. It was right in there. And I had been hired on as a swim instructor and a lifeguard, and she was my supervisor. And then I was promoted to, she was aquatics director and I was her assistant aquatics director. So we worked together for quite some years. I was at her wedding, and I remember when she, I remember when she had her boys. So, you know, I was kind of around for that whole life change for her, marriage and family. And we've been in touch becoming a principal,
right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, that's new. Yeah.
I know. It's pretty exciting.
It is fabulous.
And I don't see Catherine as often as I'd like, but we do stay in touch. And I don't know if you know that she was on my show because of her deep love for the pit bulls, for Angel City pit bulls. And she and Tom were on the show last year because she certainly has a love for those dogs. My goodness. But this show is about you today. And what I'd like to hear is just a little bit about your background and really why swimming is just so important to you.
Well, I think that when you meet people, they are one of two schools. Either they are the type of person who started swimming, you know, before they could walk, and like being in the water is more natural than being on land, and all they ever want to do is swim and it just calls to them. And then there's other people who could take it or leave it. And I'm definitely in the school, obviously, where I could be in the water 24/7 without any issue. And so I swam my whole life, and it was really the one sport that I excelled at as well, you know. And so I was a competitive swimmer for many years. And I just, it was always a joy for me. It was always something that I wanted to be doing. And I started teaching when I was 18, and it just made so much sense. It was so much fun. It didn't feel like work. I really loved it. I loved the kids. And it was always a good time. And then, you know, it just kind of remained part incorporated in my job work experience through school and when I went to college. And I taught private lessons and group lessons. I taught with the YMCA. I taught on my own, you know, just my own clients and things. And so it was always something I did. It was just really one of those things that
natural.
You do. Yeah, exactly. And I loved it so much. I mean, I was never somebody that said, oh, I'm done. I can't teach another swim lesson. Like, I still teach because I still love it and I still learn how to even be better than I was. And then 17 years ago, so back in 2001, my husband and I, who are both actually high school teachers by education and profession, we had our first son, and we were teaching at a little boarding school up in Maine. And
Let me interrupt. Yeah. I got to interrupt because I didn't know this part about you. So you were living in Maine. I love Maine. I mean, I guess that's why I'm asking. What part of Maine were you in?
Yeah.
Where were you?
We were at the base of Sugarloaf Mountain. Sugarloaf Mountain in Maine is kind of a premier ski resort on the East Coast. And they do a lot of training there for young kind of Olympic hopefuls and stuff. And there's a boarding school there for kids who want to become competitive skiers or snowboarders. And so we were teaching at this school up in Sugarloaf, Maine. And we were academic staff, but we had our little one. And it was a pretty nice, I have to say, it was a really nice way to, you know, live with a baby and be super close and always be together. And we really enjoyed it. We were house parents. We were the girls' dorm parents, which was really fun.
Were you born in California, Lisa? Are you a California native?
I mean, I kind of consider myself to be one because we moved to California in the 70s, but I'm actually Canadian. I'm from Montreal. And my husband
is
from Massachusetts.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So that weather wasn't a switch for you.
Well, you know what? I've been in LA so long that it was really quite a rude awakening. I'm so spoiled, but it wasn't that much fun, to be honest. And I only grew up West Coast skiing, so East Coast skiing is so much harsher. You know, we're all spoiled out here. If you ski Mammoth or you know Colorado or something, so
absolutely.
All to say, you know, we had a great little life experience up there, but it's hard to make a lot of money up there. It definitely is not a wealthy profession up there or community. So we knew we'd be coming back to California in the summer to see my family. And I had a few girlfriends who had little ones like I did. And in course of conversation, you know, they had said, would you want to do swim lessons, you know, for them? And I said, yeah, absolutely, sure. And then it just kind of really, like, started with just that conversation. And then they told a few of their friends. And then it was really just word of mouth. I didn't do any advertising for the first probably 5 years. And I slowly brought on other people to work with me, usually girlfriends. Or friends of friends who wanted some summer hours. Maybe they were actors and looking for, you know, part-time stuff to supplement. And so about 5 years into it, for the first 3 years, we were traveling back and forth from Maine. So I would fly to LA in the summertime and run my business. And my husband was off in the summer, so he was full-time dad. And I would be doing, you know, the heavy lifting. And then during the year, I would be off. And he would be teaching. But then after 3 years, the business really kind of started to grow a little bit. And I thought, okay, you know what? I think it's time to move back to LA now and give it a real go. So that's how the business started. That's kind of the nascent stages of it. And it's changed so much over 17 years. I mean, the one thing that remains true is I still teach. I'm still connected to a lot of my clients that I started with 17 years ago. In fact, one of them actually works for me now at first summer job. She was one of my very first students for the first year. And now she's in college and she comes home in the summer and she's working for me. So that's pretty fun.
That's neat. Maybe you could share with our audience what your mission is for your kids swim.
So I have always believed that swimming is maybe kind of the most magical physical activity you could do. It's such a departure from every other sport and every other athletic endeavor, because it really is the one thing, aside from obviously just walking, which every human can do pretty much, but it's really the one thing that anyone can do. Anyone can swim, no matter what your limitation may be, or no matter what your, you know, athletic ability or challenge in life or whatever. And I should actually say that for people that may not be able to walk, you know, maybe some people are wheelchair bound or something, they can still swim too. You know, I've seen people who are paraplegics who can get in and still swim in a pool. So the water allows for much more leniency than any other activity I could think of. And it's a very benevolent place. And my goal in life really is to see as many children learn to swim as possible and learn to swim joyfully and to love it and to feel comfortable being in it, you know?
I can appreciate, and you know, it's really interesting because I don't know if you're going to ask me this question or not, so I'll just offer this out there. You talked about the two types of people, right? The people like yourself and then the people like me. And I suppose where my level comes in is probably somewhat of the fear level. And I can recall very distinctly while I was working at the Y how many adults came to learn because they were going to take a vacation that involved swimming. And I can remember one lady particularly just overcame that fear. And so hearing you say what you've just said, that anybody can learn to swim, now I realize we're really speaking about children, but I'm relating this to myself.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
Really?
No. Yeah. I mean, in fact, last summer, I worked with a woman who was 70 who didn't know how to swim.
Kidding.
And she decided at 70, she was in very good shape. She did a lot of yoga. I mean, she was a healthy, athletic woman, but she did not know how to swim. And I taught her how to swim last summer. Swimming, it doesn't matter the age.
That's wonderful.
Any person.
That's great to hear. And for people that are living in other parts of the country now, maybe this will also not only encourage them, because we're going to talk about children and how things have changed in the swimming world, but perhaps there's somebody listening right now that's about to embark on a trip. I know I am. I'm going to Alaska in a few weeks, and it's like, really, are you not going to get in the water? Well, you know, there's probably a pool on the ship, Marcia. You might want to think about
it.
But so what have you seen in the swim world over these past 20 years? What are some of the changes that you've noticed?
Well, I think, you know, I can tell you that, let's say about 20 years ago and prior to that as well, there was a mindset that some of it was facilitated by the American Academy of Pediatrics and I think even the Red Cross organization that swim lessons should really start at age 4 and up. And they kind of determined that that was the best age to introduce swimming and for children to learn. And I understand where that comes from because there is some truth to the fact that children who are 4 and up, they're a little bit more mature in a lot of facets. Physically, they're stronger. Their core strength is more developed. They're better coordinated. They are most probably in preschool at that point, at least for a good year. So they're adaptability to social situations and separation from parents and following instructions and concentrating. All of those things are enhanced at that point. So there is some truth to four being a really good age. And I've actually seen children get in the pool at age four who've never had a swim lesson, and they just happen to be ready to swim, and they start swimming in one or two lessons because they're
really
ready to go. Yeah. So you know, there that was something that used to be very prevalent, that mindset of four and up. Nowadays, it's much more of start them as early as you can. And I honestly feel there's no detriment to having babies in the water. It's so good for them. They love it. It feels really good. There's physical exercise in it for them. Developmentally, it's great for sensory development, and they love it, especially with mom or dad. It's really a fun bonding time. So there's no downside ever to having a baby in the water. But I do feel that the experience for children from infancy, let's say 4 or 5 months old, up until age two, the focus should be less on the getting them swimming and more on building the fundamental skills. And a lot of children mm-hmm. can learn to swim. I really say beginner swimming in that stage, but they're not cognizant of safety and they're not able to really put together problem-solving skills. So I'm reluctant to point to it as a way of ensuring safety at this age, but it is building on very important fundamentals that are a huge benefit when the children are 2.5, 3, 4, 5. You know, they
sure.
they clearly, yeah. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And yeah. I think that you have a specific developmental approach to this. And maybe, you know, I'm going to tell you what's occurring to me while you're speaking is when I was a kid and I would go into somebody's swimming pool, I would say, well, I could swim. But I think swimming has a sort of a definition in my mind, what my level of swimming was. I was not afraid to put my face in the water. And I would push off from the edge of the pool, and I would go as far as I could go underwater. That was how I swam. I never learned how to swim by stroking and kicking and keeping your face out of the water and breathing and turning your head from left to right and stroking.
Right.
Because I believe that's, maybe I call what I did swimming, and maybe, I don't know if that would be a general description of what I did. I wasn't afraid to put my face in the water when I was a child, so I did do that. But honestly, I probably should really up the challenge to myself and see what it would be like to submerge my face in water. I can't even tell you how many years that's been that I've done something like that. I've avoided it. I mean, I'll walk in a pool, but I mean, as far as to actually submerge myself, I really haven't.
Well, that brings me to a really important point. And this is something else that I find when I talk to adults. The most common response when people who are adults say they don't like to swim, they're not comfortable, they don't enjoy it, they feel awkward, is because they don't know how to breathe. They don't understand how to breathe. They've never learned how to properly breathe in the water. And if you learn to swim from childhood, but you don't learn to breathe, it's a terrible, terrible detriment to a person as they get older. Because while in the initial stage of childhood, you can get away with it a little bit, as you age, if swimming is an activity that you're going to be doing for any length of time, it would be like any other activity. You have to breathe through your swimming. And if you don't learn how, it's so difficult to unlearn that You know, what you do instinctively is hold your breath. It's very, very difficult as an adult to unlearn that behavior. So that's one of the things that I've seen as a trend has changed over this past 20 years is there are a lot more of what they're called intensive programs where they teach a child to swim in like a week or 10 days or 2 weeks. They sort of have these finite amount of times where they take the child, they put it in the water, child in the water, and they kind of get that child swimming in let's say a week, okay? And yet the thing is you can't teach a child to breathe in a week. It's a very complicated process. So it's creating these young children who, as they get older, their strokes are not proficient and their ability to sustain for a long period of time is limited because they can't breathe properly. And it can be really frustrating to see that.
Right. I would think I almost don't feel like it's swimming unless you are really breathing. Otherwise, you're just submerging yourself in water. And I might have thought that was fun. But in reality, I don't think I took swim lessons. Now, my children did. I mean, I think that as parents, and we're going to talk about water safety, that whether you have a pool or not, you don't know that your child might go to a friend's home that does have a pool, or you're vacationing with your family or whatever, and you want to be certain that your children are safe. And I think water safety, whether you're the parent or you're the grandparent, whatever that is certainly very, very important. Let's talk a little bit about water safety and keeping kids safe around pools, because there are actual rules, aren't there, as far as like gates and walls and fences and things like that as well?
Yeah, that's true. So, of course, the main kind of tenets of water safety are as many barriers as possible between the child and getting to the actual pool. So if you, let's say, have a pool at your home, of course, all the doors should have locks that the kids can't necessarily open when they're young, that the pool should be gated and or covered. Some people do both. Some one or the other. I don't have a preference necessarily. A good gate is great. A good pool cover is great. But if it's, let's say, the gate, you have to make sure it's always closed and locked, and it should have a key that unlocks it, and the key should be completely out of sight from a child's view and grasp. And you have to watch pool gates carefully because small animals can come and chew on the bottom, so it gets holes in it, or they get frayed. You know, the pool gates get frayed. So it's just something you have to keep an eye on, but a good pool gate is absolutely works. And a cover that the electronic covers that have either a keypad code or a switch that you can open and close. And those are mechanicals. They open all the way and close all the way. And they're very sturdy and solid. And you can absolutely, those are good too. The thing about the covers that make it a little bit dicier is sometimes the covers can break, and they can break while they're stuck open. So you have to be careful of that, making sure, you know, that they don't break and remain stuck open or even halfway open. You have to make sure you close it all the way. Sometimes people don't quite finish closing it all the way. And then another issue that can happen, and I've seen it happen and heard stories about it happening from my own clients, is if the kids can access the pool cover and they think it's fun to open it, if someone lets them open it, then they think they can open it whenever they want. And I've heard stories of the kids going right out, opening the pool cover and just jumping right in the pool because they thought they could. So covers, you just have to be really, really strict about the covers, but they are quite good in terms of safety. And aside from things like gates and covers, you should always have a phone. There should always be a phone right by the pool where you can dial 911. There should be some kind of floaty device, something that a child could utilize if they needed to, in terms of, you know, like a buoy or something like that. There should be one by the pool. But I also would caution parents, and I do safety talks at schools and I talk to kids groups, because kids helping to try to save other kids their own age can be a very tricky prospect too. And, you know, I usually tell kids, scream your head off or run as fast as you can and get an adult if one happens not to be present. But I always tell kids, don't try to get in and save your friend yourself, because it won't work. You'll, you know, you don't have that kind of strength. But I definitely think that it's important for older kids to know what to do if they have younger brothers and sisters around their own, you know, around their own homes, and parents can facilitate that. I think that's, water safety is super important. And as kids get older, I highly recommend things like junior lifeguards. You know, once a child is, I think they start them at 9 or 10 even, nothing wrong with going through the junior lifeguard program just to develop better skills, become stronger.
Right. You know? I think that, you know, I don't have a pool, but I certainly have friends that have pools. I have friends that have grandchildren. And the fact that when you said phone, I mean, maybe that's obvious to people that have children and by pools, but I can see where, you know, we're all so connected to phones. Now there's absolutely no excuse. It's not like, you know, you're going to have your landline out at the pool. We, I mean, we all have phones, and being able to call for help is certainly important. And we're, and I know we're speaking specifically about pool safety, but when you're at a lake or at a river or places like that, you know, you definitely have even a larger challenge, right? Especially if you have fearless children that think nothing of just charging into the water. I can see why, if that's your lifestyle where you camp or you travel or you do those kinds of things, you had better be certain that your children are water safe. And maybe you could just describe to me what it actually means to be water safe. Is there a definition for that? What would you, how would you define that?
So any real swim professional, any real lifeguard or EMT or you know, Red Cross certified specialist will tell you that no person is actually ever truly water safe. And it's, in fact, why people say, you know, should never swim alone. And you just don't know. You just don't know what could happen. So, of course, you know, my gosh, I am a lifetime swimmer. I'm 49 years old. I'm very comfortable swimming, and I feel very fine about going and getting into a pool and swimming on my own for, you know, 30, 45 minutes. But you just never know. And so it is always better to have someone around you. When we're talking about it for in relationship to children, what I tell parents is this. Prior to age 8, you should assume that your child is not water safe, no matter how well they swim. And what it means to be water safe in the context that we're talking about it is that you can act as your own lifeguard. So if you're a child, you have enough experience, confidence, rationale to be able to anticipate a situation that might not be good for you, to extricate yourself from a situation that could potentially be harmful, and to deal with a situation where you were, let's say, surprised or, you know, jolted or pushed in or pushed under or something like that, that could be a situation where you could panic. You have enough experience and you're big enough and strong enough to manage that without panicking, because it's the panic that creates a potential drowning situation. So a child who is a beginner and sits on the steps and doesn't want to go in and go under is safer in the short term, is safer than a child who is overconfident in their swimming and tries to do more than maybe they can. And before they realize it, they're in a situation that they can't handle. And that child is the one that's going to panic and go under. So I think parents often have the scenario in their head of children kind of stumbling into a pool, no one's around, and they fall in and drown. And that's kind of the class drowning scenario. But what's really true is more often than not, drownings or near drownings occur with children who are already in the pool. They've already been swimming. They're already playing. They're already engaged. There's a bunch of kids around. There's a lot of commotion and activity and distractions. And maybe they're a child who should only be in the shallow end, but they kind of drift into the deep end and can't sustain. Or they're swimming, but they're tired. They get a cramp. They go under. They start swallowing water, and they start panicking. Maybe it's a situation where one child tries to give a ride to another child on his back, and he's a decent swimmer, but he can't handle a child his own age or size, and that child goes under. Like, there's all sorts of ways that a child can be in a situation where he or she could drown that involve kids who are already good swimmers. And in fact, I just read this statistic because I'm doing some research for middle school. Drowning for middle schoolers is second only to car accidents as accidental deaths. And that's especially because middle school age children, they're older. So parents often assume, and not necessarily negligently either, but assume that their child is confident and has swim skills, and they're less supervised. And so middle school age children get into crazy situations and it can result in drowning. Just as if they were a beginner who didn't even know how to swim. So,
I think
the key really is don't try to rush to label your child as water safe too early. And one of the truths about intensive swim programs is there is a desire to visually see your child swimming independently. And that visual is what parents grasp onto in their mind to help bring down their anxiety of, okay, if my child fell in, she'd be okay. But it's a premature label. You see your child swimming, so you think, okay, they're okay now. But in truth, they're probably no more safe in a lot of experiences than they would be if they weren't swimming at all, because as a parent, it's our job to be vigilant for our children. And if we think our children are more okay than they are, but we don't know that they're not okay, it relaxes the level of vigilance. So we get less vigilant. And for as the parent, it's really our job to keep our children safe as long as possible in the pool.
And
water. Does that make sense?
Terrific. It does, and it's really good advice.
Okay, good.
I mean, I hadn't really ever thought about that the way you've just described
it,
but it really does make sense. When I remember swimming back when I was a child, okay, I don't know if this is a wife's tale, an old wife's tale, or if this is actually something that would be adhered to today. But what I can remember was, okay, so you've just had lunch. You can't go in the pool now, because if you go in the pool after you eat, you're going to get cramps and you're going to, you know, die and drown or whatever.
That's a wise
fact behind that. It is a wise fact.
You know what? It is. I mean, here's the thing. It isn't as comfortable to swim right after you've eaten. It isn't physically. It doesn't feel as good. The one thing you should avoid right before you go swimming is dairy. You don't really want kids eating dairy, because dairy takes longer to digest. And if a child is going to throw up in the water from anything, it's going to be dairy. Like, you know, have some fruit, have some crackers. That's okay. You know, a little carbohydrate snack is all right. But if you have milk or cheese or ice cream or anything like that, it takes longer to digest. And if the child swallows some water accidentally, they can just throw up dairy all over the place. So that's the one thing I tell parents is don't eat the dairy.
Oh, that's,
you know. But
there you go.
Yeah.
Another yeah. factoid. I love that. That's why I enjoy doing this show so often, so much, because so often I learn things that I just didn't know, and I'm assuming that the same could be said for my listeners. When you think about the benefits of swimming, you've been swimming, I think you said, you know, before you were walking. What would you say, what are the benefits? Why should somebody find the benefits of swimming so important?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, from the young age of childhood, it certainly enhances every other aspect of development, sensory, communication, motor skills. It's wonderful for children who may have some physical delays or motor coordination issues, children with special needs. It's wonderful for, I mean, it's really good for all children. There's this across the board, but I'm saying it is and such an inclusive environment for any child, and it enhances any other form of development that goes on. So from that aspect, it's wonderful. As children get older, there's so much coordination involved in facilitating strokes that it really hits on a lot of different cognitive perspectives that are required to be a good swimmer. I mean, the coordination of thinking about the strokes and the breathing and positioning, and you're using both sides of your body at the same time in different ways. It's really complicated and nuanced, and it's terrific to help balance strength, endurance, core strength. It also doesn't put any stress on growing bones and joints. So for children that are involved with other sports, it's a great addition, a great enhancement to other sports, because it allows for terrific interval training without putting more stress on the child's body.
Like
so,
knees,
I mean,
and shoulders and things like that.
Exactly. And then through life, swimming is, I mean, it is the sport for longevity. And in fact, I should have gotten the quote on this, but there was something I read in, maybe it was AARP magazine or something like that, but that let's say a 70-year-old person who swims every day, let's say, consistently, has the, maybe by life insurance standards, has the kind of similar, I'm trying to think of what the word is, but it's like
life
they match up against, well, just at their health in the 70s, if they're constant swimmers, could be matched to somebody in their late 30s or early 40s who is only a moderate exerciser. So it does incredible things for longevity as well. And oftentimes you can even get better life insurance rates if you are a lifetime swimmer as you get older.
Wow. Isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. We've talked about all ages. We've talked about the fact that, yes, you could teach somebody my age to swim with the desire that I want to, because clearly that would have to be there. I mean, I'd have to really give in to the fear and say, I can do this because you're going to make me feel safe. But when we talk about infants, you know, what occurred to me back when I was having children and a little bit afterwards, women were starting to have these birthing centers where they actually delivered their children in water. I don't know that they still do that today, but I know does that still happen even today?
Oh, yeah.
Having birthing so, you know, you think about if you're that mom and dad that's just delivered your beautiful baby boy or girl, and the first environment they have it, well, it's their first environment outside the womb, because I guess they've been in water the whole time, really, is to be in a pool. I wonder if that how that translates into desiring to swim, because I'm wondering, you know, if infants can really, if they can actually learn to swim, you know? It says, can they learn to swim?
So, again, it kind of goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier. I mean, an infant can absolutely swim. It's just kind of a modified, it looks like they're sort of floating and kicking in the water. They can. They physically can. I've seen babies swim. I've worked with babies who swim. And that said, it's really about keeping that, keeping them exposed to the activity of swimming and continuing to keep them swimming, because they're not completely cognizant of what they're doing. They wouldn't really know how to save themselves at that point. So it's more about, it's swimming. They can be independent for a couple of seconds in the water, mm-hmm. but what I call it real swimming, I don't know, you know, I mean, it's by definition, I'm not sure. It's very rudimentary. So,
That's interesting.
Yes.
You had mentioned floaties earlier when you were talking about safety, about the phone and having mm-hmm. something like that. And I can remember at the Y, I don't think we ever allowed floaties in the pool. Did you at Westside allow floaties in the pool at all?
You know, when I was teaching at Westside back in the day, they had the bubble. It was like you strapped it around the waist and it had a thing on the back. It was like looked like a football, really. It looked like a blow up football with a kind of fabric over it. You would, you know, at the start of the season, everybody got their blown up football and you would let the air out as they were progressing. You would kind of strategically start to let the air out. So yeah, so they used to do that. I don't think they do it anymore. And you know, I don't recommend ever using floaties for swim lessons, of course. And I'm not a huge fan of using floaties recreationally unless one of two things is going on. Unless you are in an environment with your child where there's a lot of distractions, like let's say you're at a barbecue with a bunch of people, a pool party, on vacation, at a hotel, at a new environment, definitely have them in a floaty, a vest, absolutely, one they can't get out of. Or if you are in the pool with more than one of your children, if you have an infant and you have a toddler, you know, if you have an infant, mm-hmm. you have a toddler, maybe you have a five-year-old, if you are really the only parent in the pool with your kids and you want to take them in swimming, definitely just put it on and be conservative, because safe is just the way to go. But if it's just you and your child in the pool, just the two of you, and you just want to get in and play with them, try to keep it off. Try not to have it out, because you want them to get as much experience in the pool without any kind of flotation device.
That makes sense. That does make sense to me. Is there a right or a wrong way to learn to swim? You've been in this business for so long. And I'm not asking you to criticize somebody that maybe does things differently than you do. But do you feel like that there's certain approaches, certain steps? You start with this, you go to that. You know, is there a fundamental way that you developmentally teach children to swim?
Well, I do believe that breathing has to be incorporated right from the beginning. I really do. And in the very beginning stages, it's basically you just say the word bubbles about a million times in the course of a lesson. Like, it's probably the word I've said more than any other word in the English language, because you are constantly having to remind young children to blow out. But what it does ultimately is you have children who, by the time they're 3, 4, 5 years old, they're swimming and they're breathing. So we don't have to deal with any of that breath holding business. So I do think from the beginning, breathing should be incorporated, getting their face in the water comfortably, and learning to swim in proper position also, I think, is very important. I don't recommend teaching dog paddle, or I call it kind of the scramble, which is that sort of kind of frantic, panicked swim to get a kid to the side with their head up. I think children should learn to swim in prone position. It's better for their body, for their neck, for their back, and they can. Children who are a little bit more advanced in age, like 4 years old, have more neck and back strength, so they can pick their own head up to take a breath. But I typically prefer teaching the rolling method so that they roll onto their back and rest for a few seconds. It's a safety technique as well. And a lot of schools actually follow that formula now. It's pretty common to teach the rolling method. And it's an excellent precursor to side breathing. It's a very smooth transition from rolling onto your back to turning to side breathing. So,
You mentioned I am reflecting and I'm listening to what you're saying, and you just pulled another memory out of my mind, and I'm sure that this is something that happens in people's homes. When you talked about bubbles, isn't that what we would say with our kids when we started giving them baths and they're in a bathtub? And isn't that some of the first places children learned to do bubbles?
I had forgotten that. And it's such a benevolent word, and kids, you know, they really associate it with things like summer and, you know, those things of packages of bubbles where they blow, you know, through the little stick and blow the bubbles. I mean, it's very much has a benevolent mindset to it for kids, but it is the single most important skill in teaching swimming. I mean, it really, to my mind, it's above and beyond all other skills, is the ability to breathe in the water.
What would you say to someone, or what would you recommend to, say, a parent that has had a child that's had some kind of traumatic experience? They've been pushed into the pool. Something traumatic has happened. How do you help that parent have their child overcome something like that?
Well, you know, I try to tell parents, if this is, let's say, it hasn't happened yet, I try to tell parents ahead of time, don't, you know, if you have had to pull your child out from under the water, it's a very scary experience for them and for you. But I do recommend trying to downplay it as much as possible. If the child is okay, like if they're conscious and they were startled and only under for a second or two, they know they went under, but it's kind of over quickly. I do say, you know, don't call it in company that they could hear you. Like, don't talk to other adults and say, oh, he almost drowned. You kind of just want to say, you went under the water. It was really scary for a second. Mommy came and got you, or daddy came and got you and pulled you right up. You did such a great job keeping yourself up, and we're going to keep practicing our swimming so we get better and better at it. You want to kind of just not gloss it over, but you do want to redirect so that it doesn't feel like a really negative experience. If it did happen, and we're talking about something that already occurred, and the child was traumatized, then you do have to treat that child with a lot of, you know, care and caution, and you want to make sure they feel super safe and super comfortable, and you want to give them enough time to reinvest in the experience in a way that feels safe for them. Eventually, they'll get over it. Eventually, with a good swimming lesson experience, they will get past it. And it's better not to try to hang on to it too much, because they'll feed off of their parents' energy or their parents' language or whatever. But, you know, it does happen. Children do have scary life experiences. And with swimming especially, you don't want that to become what they hold on to. You want them to overcome that and get past it so that they feel safe again.
I bet. Yeah, I think that's excellent advice. I'm thinking about people that don't have pools. What do you recommend to families who don't have pools? What would be, because let me interrupt my own question right here, because I think this would be really important. I don't want this to get away from us. For those people that are living that are localized in the Los Angeles area or thereabouts, I don't know how far you travel with your business. Why don't you let our listeners know how they can learn more about your program? You do have a website that's an exceptionally cool website. Would you like to tell people how they can find you?
Sure, of course. So our website is kidswim.org, and we've been in business 17 years now. And we also, you know, if you're not in the area but are interested, we have a lot of articles on the website, a lot of information, and we do a really comprehensive newsletter that has tips on water safety and what you to do if you go on vacation, and how to handle difficult situations, and what to do if the child regresses during lessons or behavior issues. Like, we really cover a lot of topics. So you can always sign up just to receive the newsletter for more information and resources. But we do have locations throughout the LA area, and we can come to people who do have their own homes. But if you are somebody that isn't, let's say, close to where we service, you don't have your own pool, I would say that, of course, places like the YMCA, I'm still such a fan of, definitely take advantage of their programs. I do like private lessons for children ages 2 to 5. I think if you can structure it that way, it is the best option, because that way your child really gets full focused attention for the time that he or she is having the lesson. And it's just a heightened level of safety because the instructor's eyes are only on that one child. And
right.
Every child learns differently. And so if you have it even split between two children, you're catering to one child more than you're catering to another. It's just, that's how it happens. So for children who are beginners and really need that time to get into it, I think private lessons are great that way. As children are older, I think it's fine to have small groups. Can be really fun for them. But from the 2 to 5 age range, I really like the private lesson model. I think it's very successful.
I'm thinking back to the old days when one of the most popular swim classes that we offered at the Westchester Y was parent-child swim. And I know Catherine's been teaching it forever.
Oh, yeah.
And really,
I used to teach that class at the Westside Y.
Yes.
There'd be 10 families in it. Huge classes.
Oh, yes. And oftentimes it was the dad and the child, which was really a beautiful bonding moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just... Yeah. I don't know, it was one of the first things that parents did with their children at the Y, because they started them very young. And just being in that warm water, just singing, just holding, just doing all of that. What a wonderful entree into being in the water. So whether you live in Los Angeles, you live in the middle of the country, or you're from Maine, you know, there are YMCAs that can certainly provide that kind of opportunity. I just think that's terrific. I know at the Y, we always had chlorine pools. I don't know if that turned into. I think you guys at Westside had something called bromine. Is that right? Or something that sounded a word that was similar to that. Maybe I've got that word wrong.
I can't remember now.
Yeah.
I think at the time that I worked there, it was a chlorine pool. There, you know, if we're talking about pools that are at home, you know, home use pools. Then it's not that much of a difference. I mean, saline pools, you still do have to use chlorine to shock treatment the pool. Saline pools on their own can't get rid of the bacteria the way that good old-fashioned chlorine does. And chlorinated pools for home use, we're talking about much, much lower levels of chlorine as well than we would be if we're mm-hmm. talking about, you know, a multi-use pool. So
sure.
I don't have any issues with chlorine pools. Although saline sounds cleaner, you know what I mean? It sounds nicer. It's really
yeah.
not that different, to be honest.
No kidding.
Because you still do have to
do
use
have,
chlorine in the saltwater pool. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Do you have a mm-hmm. An ideal water temperature that you think the pool should be maintained?
Well, if you're talking about pools that are going to be specifically for teaching young children, then between 90 and 92 is actually ideal. You do want
okay.
it warmer than not. But
mm-hmm.
if you are talking about a pool that is going to be multi-use, you can't keep it that warm because people can't swim. You can't have people doing laps. So typically I think they keep it around 85, 86, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, it's a little on the chilly side for young ones, but they can manage. It's just not as comfortable, that's all.
Right.
But, yeah.
I do remember that the warm water pool at Westchester, that was the temperature we kept it because that pool was also
mm-hmm.
used for our seniors that wanted to be in a water. It was
right.
a shallow pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah.
that worked really well at the Y for us in that regard. Mm-hmm. I know we had talked mm-hmm. about May being Drowning Prevention Month, and I think you've given us some really good mm-hmm. tips. I'd like to see more coverage of this,
mm-hmm.
frankly, on the news. I'd like to see
mm-hmm.
people being really aware because summer really and vacationing time, it really is just around the corner. And I think
mm-hmm.
that you gave some tremendously helpful tips about, you know, just phones and covers and gates and things like that. So I
mm-hmm,
hope that people
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
took note of that. If you were, say, a parent is going to have a pool party for
mm-hmm.
a birthday party, the kids are turning
mm-hmm.
7 years old, 6 years old, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any
mm-hmm.
tips for what you would say to parents that are coming with their for
mm-hmm.
the purpose of
mm-hmm.
a pool party?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, first of all, don't ever have a drop-off pool party. Definitely have one parent that has to be present. I would say that you absolutely should hire a lifeguard for the party. And if you're having more than 15 children, you might even want to consider two, unless the kids are a lot older. But I would say you definitely want to have two lifeguards if you're having more than 15 children. And I think it's also great to set up a side diversion outside the pool, like a slip and slide or they have like a bouncy water slide or something like that, because one, there might be children who don't really want to go in the pool. So it would be fun to have an alternate activity that feels water related. Also, it can help keep the pool itself from getting too crowded if you have kind of an alternate diversion from the pool itself. And I would also say that, be strict about the pool rules. Don't allow jumping from off the jacuzzi. You know, don't allow large rafts in the pool or things that could make it more difficult for the lifeguard to do their job. Like, you know, you are in charge and you want to make sure everybody is safe. So whatever rules you establish, make sure the lifeguard knows what they are and that they can implement those rules for you.
Gosh. This is all such important information. And Lisa, I want to thank
okay,
you. I know that
yeah.
you have a very
sure.
busy life, and I think this information is real important for parents and grandparents to be familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Just some of the things that you've just suggested, I think, will really help parents be prepared as summer approaches. But swimming isn't just a summer event. And I realize that people that love swimming like you do don't just say, well, I only swim in the summer, because in reality, you swim constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And your goal is for these children, like your student, that
mm-hmm.
has now come back to you years later because
mm-hmm.
they still love swimming that much. That must be incredibly
mm-hmm.
gratifying. And I just want to
mm-hmm.
thank you so much for joining
mm.
me. And once again, if
pleasure.
People want to learn more, they can go to kidswim.org
mm-hmm.
and, like you said, sign
mm-hmm.
up for your newsletter and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
I'm delighted that Catherine suggested that I contact you. So thank you, Catherine.
Oh.
And I want to just, I'm just so glad you're with me today.
Well, it was really a pleasure. I loved speaking with you, Marcia, and I encourage swimming lessons for you too. Let's make that a goal.
Talk with you about that. Well, thank you.
That, yeah.
I know how to find you. So thank you once again, Lisa.
Yes.
And
you're so
everybody,
welcome.
Have a wonderful, wonderful week. And I'll look forward to having you join me again next week for Born to Talk, because that's what I was born to do. So thank you, everybody, for joining me today.